6 minutes after 4 o'clock, as we head into the final hour of the overnight show, of course. Coming up next hour, Colorado's Morning News. And April Zesbaum, Stephen Tubbs, will bring you up to speed on what happened around the planet while you were sleeping, and also a look at the weather. It's actually going to be very much like we had yesterday, and the day before that, and the day before that. We're in that kind of pattern. But we'll also have a look at the sports All-Star Game. All-Star Game. How about that? Whilst the rest of the, the American League and the National League, are most of them are taking their time off. We have two in the All-Star Game, by the way. Hallelujah. But we'll have a look at that coming up, of course. Alan Roach will bring us up to speed. And look at the traffic mess out there, such as it is every morning. And we have a new traffic reporter, by the way, so. Anyway, 303-713-8585, the number. We're going to join up with a gentleman who knows something about cybersecurity. And after North Korea whacked us and South Korea got whacked by denial of service by overwhelming servers from the North Koreans, it's assumed. Andrew Kolarik, a cybersecurity expert. And Andrew, good morning.
Good morning.
And thank you so kindly. By the way, you've written two seminal pieces, Cyber Warfare and Cyber Terrorism, that you co-wrote with Lech Janczewski, is that right?
Yes, and, the latest one.
And the last one, Political and Economic Implications.
Well, that one was actually my second one, which was pretty well received. But, the message isn't necessarily getting out there. It still is a churning process, and governments are now starting to become aware that, we're dependent on this technology, and the technology can be used to disable our dependence.
Yeah, can you give us a brief explanation of what happened the last couple of days?
Well, yeah, basically, there's a concept called a botnet. Now, let's say you have a personal computer at home, and you do your normal internet surfing and your banking and so forth, so on. Well, you visit some websites or you get some emails that are destructive in nature. They infect your computer with this botnet software. It sits in the background, slows your system down a little bit, but then starts talking to other computers that you talk to and starts infecting them. So tells two friends, tell two more friends, and all of a sudden you have a million computers talking to each other, being centrally controlled with this botnet software. Then somebody says, well, what are we going to do with this? And they will direct either a spam attack. You'll start getting spam emails. They will, Estonia, when they shut down that country, that was 1 million bots. Okay. In the world, there's an estimated 35 to 40 million bots. So what this attack on South Korea, White House, Pentagon, and so forth, is these extensive botnets focusing their attacks. Now, the attack method is very simple. When I teach a class, let's say I teach a class of 650 students, if all of them talk to me at once, I don't know what anybody is saying.
Yeah.
And I don't even know how to begin to start responding. Well, when a million bots talk to the systems, they get overloaded and they simply shut down, or the bandwidth gets filled up so fast, nobody else can talk. That's basically what occurred.
Now, is it certain or is it just presumed that this was launched from North Korea?
Well, now we're stepping into the political arena.
Yeah.
The reality is South Korea has put out several reports that says the attacks came from 16 different countries. And a botnet doesn't reside in just one country. However, all you have to do to activate and direct a botnet is connect of the bot, and then it starts talking to all of its neighbors that it's connected to. So this attack could come from Russia, it could come from North Korea, it could come from China, it could come from the U.S. You really don't know unless you have some kind of on-the-ground spy network that lets you know the documentation or the order came down from somebody.
Yeah. Now, the fact that South Korea was also one of the targets might mitigate to try to think that it might have been North Korea.
Well, I suspect that, you know, there's a probability it came from North Korea because they like to harass. However, electronic attacks are only effective for three basic reasons, in my opinion. The first is economic espionage and sabotage. So you mess with Google and you mess with Microsoft and Bank of America and so forth by overloading their systems, causing them not to be able to do business. That didn't really occur, although one of the banks was attacked. So it's in the realm of possibility. The second is as a force multiplier to a physical attack. You disable the communication networks of your enemy, and then you launch an attack. That obviously didn't happen. However, these attacks could be a prelude to something to come, you know, a test, firing a missile off into the ocean. And then the third is because you want to make a political statement. In the Middle East, every time there's a major conflict, all the websites of the opposing side seem to get attacked and disabled. So I suspect that this falls into the political statement. South Korea is not talking with North Korea or something on this line. But again, no one really knows until somebody makes it very clear.
Do you think that we're going to see this again?
Oh, we're going to see this forever.
Mm. Well, that's not encouraging, is it?
Now, let me qualify that statement. The reality is you have people who don't maintain their computers. You have antiviral companies that aren't staying ahead of the curve but in a reactionary mode. So you write something new, the virus software doesn't know what to do with it, and you get infected. You have government agencies who are making claims that they're going to save us when the reality is the majority of these assets fall into private hands. You have internet service providers who are pressed to make marginal profit, being required to secure all of these things. It's a distributed open system, much like our country. And it's impossible to guard everything, every process, so forth, so on. The technology that enables us also enables our enemies. It's an open playing field. So until we actually fundamentally relook at the technology or how we're making use of it, these attacks are going to continue and proliferate.
How bad could this get? I mean, in other words, how seriously could it affect us?
Okay, well, let's examine how we make use of computers. All right, we use them to control our electrical grid, our dams, our water supplies. Now, that's infrastructure. All right, so we could shut down water, electric, power, so forth, so on. I don't think we're going to be blowing up things electronically, but we definitely could shut them down. We use computers for all of our finance and commerce. So go to the bank machine and find out that you don't have any money or that you can't access your money for the next week. We use computers for all of our mobile and landline communication. In fact, we use it for satellite as well. And satellites can be hacked into and taken over. Same method, same process. So our telecommunications could shut down. Emergency medical services use mobile communication. The list just goes on and on. Now, America has a very big, robust, distributed set of computing systems. So to take the whole country down is a monumental task. But you could take regions. You could shut down a state or a major city or a power grid. So so forth, so on.
Hmm.
So, but again, computers have the ability to proliferate. The longer this virus software sits on your computer, the more deadly the attack when it's coordinated.
If it's that easy, is there any way one can protect against it?
Well, if you're an individual and you want to protect against it, you can protect your individual PC by having the latest antiviral, by conducting yourself in a certain fashion, meaning you don't go to certain websites that are indicated as a risk. You don't open emails that are, you don't know who this person is, you know, and you'll probably eliminate a lot of the scams as well, you know, sending $50 million to you if you give them $10,000. but you're only one component. Your internet service provider also is a component. So they're going to have, you're going to have to pick an ISP that is active in this area to keep its customers safe. And they are working at it. And then you also have the telecommunication infrastructure, and AT&T and so forth, who provide the bandwidth and the line. And they have to work to keep this stuff clear. So there's a combination of factors. And if everybody does their job, these attacks are kept to a minimum. But we can only control what's in the U.S. These are worldwide computers that are accessing and overloading internal computers. So gatekeeper control at the gateways is another factor that has to occur. When an overload of attacks come into the country through one conduit, it gets shut down. These are the types of processes.
Right.
I wish I had greater news.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not encouraged. Hold on a second, Andrew. We're going to take a commercial break, and we'll pick it up where we left off. And we're talking with cybersecurity expert Andrew Kolarik, cyber terrorism. He's written Cyber Warfare and Cyber Terrorism, and also Cyber Terrorism, Political and Economic Implications, and kind of got an idea of what we're dealing with. 303-713-8585, the number. Those of you who have questions or comments, by all means, join with. Do you make your living with a computer? Who doesn't make a living? I don't think anybody does anything anymore without a computer. 19 minutes after 4 o'clock, we continue on News Radio 850 KOA.
Si je disais tout ce qu'ils chantent, tout ce que j'ai vu et tout ce que je sais, j'en dirais tout et pas assez, et tout ça je veux l'oublier. D'autres voix chantent un vieux refrain, c'est leur souvenir, c'est plus le mien. Je n'ai plus qu'un seul cri du cœur, j'aime pas le malheur, j'aime pas le malheur. Et le malheur me le rend bien, mais je le connais, il me fait plus peur. Il dit qu'on est mariés ensemble, même si c'est vrai, je n'en crois rien. Cet oiseau-là chante avec moi, toujours, toujours encore vivante, sa pauvre voix tremble pour moi. Si je disais tout ce qu'il chante, tout ce que j'ai vu et tout ce que je sais, j'en dirais tout et pas assez, et tout ça je veux l'oublier. D'autres voix chantent un vieux refrain, c'est leur souvenir, c'est
le mien. Edith
Piaf doing
night's music, because it's Bastille Day. That's why it's our French show. Of course, we don't do it in French. We just all sound like Maurice Chevalier. 60 degrees going on right now. Oh, it's partly cloudy. Well, it's mostly clear, actually. I was outside. And the weather today, it's going to be just like it was yesterday, actually. A good goodly chance of temps reaching the upper 80s, 90 degrees, and then thunder showers rolling in the afternoon, just like it did yesterday and the last few days. We're in that pattern. So, but enjoy it. Rain's a good thing. Rain is our friend, so... But 60 official degrees. Downtown is about 64. It's about 63 outside our studio as we continue. And back again with Andrew Kolarik, cyber terrorism. He's a cybersecurity expert trying to, that's what he does. He teaches. You teach it, and you also, among other things, you say you have a few simple objectives: mastering the technology, helping others to make the best use of it, and preparing the organizations for the future. But mostly also you consult on cybersecurity. Now, I would think that the federal government, and of course, when we talk about the federal government, that there are only certain agencies that we're talking about. When it comes to the economy, there it's not the government, is it? I mean, we're talking about corporations.
Well, it's actually, in the current political environment, it's a combination of the two.
Yeah, well, we own AIG and GM, I know, but...
But essentially, businesses are the primary responsible party for securing their system. The government is playing a coordination role and a funding role, and they're trying to do other things in addition. And I'm not going to get into the for or against.
Yeah, right.
What I'd like to see is a rational approach. And so far, in the last, I guess, 4 or 5 years, I really haven't seen those efforts being brought forward. For instance, okay, you know, you asked me, what can we do about this? So I'm going to talk a little bit about what we can do on a political level. You know, maybe give the government something to work on.
Yeah, no doubt.
Okay. Now, you have a phone number, correct?
Correct.
And you pay a monthly fee for that phone number. But you also have to pay additionally to have that phone number unlisted. Now, that means that you don't own that phone number. The phone company does. Otherwise, you could just say, I don't want anybody to know my phone number.
Mm-hmm.
As a result, that information belongs to someone else. Well, what would happen if we reverse this? And we do this for everything. You own your own information. And there's a mandatory shelf life on information, such as credit card information, such as personal information. You know, why are we storing this information indefinitely? Put a shelf life on it. Then when a system gets penetrated, you minimize the impact of the theft of the data. Now, that's something the government could do.
Well,
they could make a law overnight, just like that. And everybody would benefit. And that would actually make it easier for a whole lot of businesses to conduct their operations.
Now, you say it would be easier.
Yeah. Every computer system on a business commerce level, it is not a big deal to go into the data because it all has date stamps as to when it was put in and simply automatically remove it. That makes the search functions and the access functions and the update processes more efficient. You're not using old data. You're not sending emails to people from 5 years ago who no longer have the address, et cetera. If you got rid of all this data accumulation, now there's less reason to be penetrating systems. And there's less risk if a system gets penetrated. Now, you know, that's just one of several concepts that I've been trying to promote, and it's just not getting through to people.
Yeah. I'm wondering if the reason why people don't want to do that would because they would have to effectively, as you say, a shelf life, they'd have to reset every in a periodic way. They'd have to reset their data. And they'd have to put it back on online again, available in as you say, in a reset. That would be a bit time consuming, wouldn't it?
Well, that would require some fundamental changes in editing, in managing data, but it's nothing that isn't already being done in the vast majority of corporate America. They purge their data on a regular basis. But they have an inclination to hold on to as much as possible because they might need it in the future. Well, if you change that paradigm, if you change that approach that says, you know, I've got a 2-year window on data, so I'm either going to make good use of it or I'm not going to collect it. I'm not going to store and keep it. Now, I'm not talking, you know, informational websites where people have, you know, discussion forums and things like this. I'm talking personal and legitimate owned information. things that are critical to your credit rating, to your financial standing, so forth, so on. And if you did something like this, and again, the specifics can be worked out, but the general concept is the data is why you penetrate a system. Okay?
Yeah, that would be the reason.
That's the reason. Well, if you have limited data, you lower the risk and you also lower the incentive. I mean, it's a very simple concept. These are the types of things that government could do without mucking it up. Well, they do.
Well,
I mean,
yeah.
I am a firm believer that you don't alienate the people in a good position to help you. But at the same time, you have to manage them. And when we don't manage them, then they get into trouble.
Yeah, and then they blame you.
And then they blame you.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, right. So it's your fault. You're supposed to watch after my data. I said, no, it's your data. Yeah, when it comes to the government agencies, the ones, you know, for instance, you mentioned the power grid, but there's also the FAA, for instance, you know, the air traffic control system itself. You know, there was, what was it, in the movie Sneakers?
Yes.
When they found an algorithm that broke just about every single encryption that was available. And they could get involved. They could take a look at just about every one of the vital systems that the government ran, including not just the power grid, but also the air traffic control system, which was the national ATC, where they could see every single plane in the air at the same time.
Yes.
And they say, who wants to crash an airliner? Could that kind of thing be done?
Well, it wouldn't be done on a universal level at this point. Because a lot of the systems are archaic and they're old. But when they upgrade them, they will generally be all of the same platform, and then something like that becomes reality. The reality, though, is why do you want to crash an airplane?
Yeah, well.
And if it's to frighten people, that's one thing. If it's for economic gain, you know, if American Airlines has an accident, their stock price is affected. These types of things are also reality. So, you know, again, I hate to be the bringer of gloom and doom, but if we don't point out what the problem is, where the real threat lies, because so many people keep minimizing this as trivial. It's just spam. It's just an annoyance. We're not going to put the effort and the resources and the focus into solving these problems, into redesigning and rebuilding secure systems, not just implementing efficient systems.
How does one thwart, say, I mean, you talk in the first segment about how you get the, among others, the people in the phone system to manage their bands where the bandwidth is wide enough or they can effectively block it, keep the data so that it's, you know, shelf life, as it were. But in any given moment, there could be an attack done. And I'm wondering, is there any way that can ever be avoided? In other words, if let's say the North Koreans, and I don't know that the Russians would have any interest or the Chinese, because God knows they do enough business with us, it would be against their better interests. North Koreans don't do any business with anybody, at least not anybody reputable. They would certainly might want to do this again. Is there any way that would be a quick and reliable method to thwart them at every move?
Well, let's look at it from a traffic pattern, okay? Every morning you have rush hour. Every morning you have a backup of cars. Essentially, a distributed denial of service attack, which is what occurred in South Korea and is occurring here in the U.S. every single day, by the way, is a traffic jam. Now, how do you alleviate a traffic jam? You either increase the size of the road to allow more traffic. You change the flow of traffic so that it doesn't get backed up. It may not go full speed, but it gets evened out. You divert traffic, which a lot of these folks can do, though, again, the systems may not have that capability for these types of contingencies. But most of the telecom providers are continually struggling with more bandwidth to accommodate these issues, filtering potential hostile traffic, and keeping their profits in line with usage, because there's no profit in doing these preventative issues.
Mm. Do you consult to the government on any of these issues, or just the corporations?
Well, I'll speak with anybody.
Yeah, I understand. But have you?
Yes, I've done some work with the FBI and the Secret Service and a few other organizations.
Well, I would hope that the Pentagon would be interested in talking to you, to be sure.
Well, just keep in mind that there's a lot of established bureaucracy who hold positions and have vested interests in keeping things the way they are. So it's a slow process. And that's probably the number one obstacle I keep encountering, is people have a vested interest not to change this.
And the vested interest in this case not to change it would be whom?
Well, if you are, say, in charge of training for, I don't know, let's say the Air Force,
mm-hmm.
or cyber defense.
Yeah.
You know, they're starting a new program. Or the Pentagon. And, well, these are the training methods we've been using, and so we consider them proven, and we're going to continue to do it. To get an organization to take a look at how they are doing this training and to maybe get them to do it in another fashion to give a competitive advantage, there are huge hurdles to overcome the bureaucracy, because people want to conform, they want to get into a process and a mode and a system and just work their job.
Yeah.
So disrupting the flow and the process and the bureaucracy is a very large-scale effort.
Yeah, it is.
So these support systems that give us capabilities are not always given the attention needed because of it. These are normal people. You know, sometimes we like to talk that the government is this and the government. No, these are people. They're good people. They're trying their best. But at the same time, most people don't like to change what they're doing. They want to work their job. They want to go home to their family, so forth, so on. So bringing change is not always a pleasant process. And in many cases, it happens after a threshold of pain, which is what we're going to be experiencing in the near future if we can't get people to actually get behind this and change what they're doing.
Now, you say these kind of things are not only going to happen again, but going to happen more frequently.
Absolutely. And it's not, I don't say that with any happiness. If you continue to expand the use of computers in all economies and the networking and communication of computers globally, and they continue to expand, you're only going to increase the opportunity for these types of attacks to continue.
Is there, you know, this seems like a silly question, but, I mean, since my knowledge of computers is only limited to my ability to use the things for information only, but is, if one regards this as an organism, and I kind of do, then wouldn't there be, in the fashion of a bot, a kind of antibody that would effectively learn and thwart it again?
Now, that's a very astute observation.
All right, hold the thought, because we have to do a commercial break. We'll pick it up right there. 303-713-8585, the number is. We continue with Andrew Kolarik. He's a cybersecurity expert. We continue on News Radio 850 KOA.
l'instant, elle vit le meilleur de sa vie, comme moi. Et qu'en fermant les yeux, elle abandonne un peu de sa main dans ses cheveux, comme moi. Peut-être qu'à son cœur, elle épingle une fleur, et puis regarde l'heure, comme moi. Comme moi, peut-être bien aussi, qu'à l'instant elle vit le meilleur de sa vie, comme moi. Et qu'en fermant les yeux, elle abandonne un peu de sa main dans ses cheveux.
4:43 as we continue. Edith Piaf doing it tonight, of course. It's Bastille Day, which is why we're playing Edith. Back again with our guest, Andrew Kolarik, and a cybersecurity expert. When we left it off, Andrew, was the notion that perhaps maybe a method within the system, because as I say, I regard the system as kind of an organism.
Well, and that's exactly what it is. It grows.
Yeah.
And it accesses as it grows. There are competing viruses out there for botnets that when they encounter each other, they destroy each other.
How very much like antibodies.
Yes. And so what happens is one is growing, encounters the other, and the stronger of the two wins.
Yeah.
So bots actually get hijacked by other bots. And the antivirus software is supposed to be accommodating this, and it's not. So this is, you know, it is an organic, growing type of environment. At the same time, you can control, you know, like an origami tree or something, you know, or whatever.
There's a thought.
But, well, you know, it's a little late. But yeah. In any event, the whole concept here is when two computers talk, they exchange what they have of value, and they have a purpose in that communication. So if you can actually control that purpose, you could do a reverse botnet. You could put antibodies into the organic system.
Right.
And eliminate these things. But there's a whole lot of legal issues that go with that.
Like what, for instance?
Well, what happens if the antibody destroys some part of your computer?
Ah.
Okay, or once it takes over, it doesn't let anything else install. So now you need to wipe your hard drive and so forth. So there's, again, we're dealing with the micro that then aggregates to the macro. We want to solve the macro, but we have micro problems.
So even if we did come up with such a solution, it would become a problem.
If the antiviral companies produced a solution, then they have our implied consent by installing their software on the machine.
True.
And consent is really what is required. So they could create a collaborative effort to eliminate these things. But that would require that the corporations get together and agree on a unified platform, and there might not be any money involved.
That's not going to happen.
Well, but again, these guys will figure out how to make it commercially feasible. But without those monies, corporate America does not move forward. And that's not a bad thing. That's what they're about. Producing revenue for their shareholders.
Yeah, but if their systems get wiped out on a regular interval, that wouldn't help anybody, would it?
No, but it's, risk management, the concept of risk, means you inherently have accepted that a system is risky. they've already come to terms that these systems are risky. So they have built in that if there is a catastrophic failure, well, here's what we're going to do, rather than fundamentally redesign the system. And that's probably because of some cost-benefit analysis.
But you say that that won't come about until a certain amount of pain and the threshold will have been reached, and that's going to come relatively soon, I should think.
Well, one would think, based on what's occurring. But pain is different for every organization. Look at the credit card company.
Mm.
They have been letting us bear the pain with higher interest rates of credit card fraud instead of being more active in eliminating the fraud.
But enough cyber attacks would certainly hit that threshold relatively quickly, don't you think?
Yes.
And
yeah,
that you anticipate and in increasing frequency.
Yes. Yeah. Now I can't say when a catastrophic failure is going to occur.
Could such a catastrophic failure, I mean, a literal system-wide crash?
There's only a handful of dominant operating systems and network infrastructures. So if there was something that could affect on a wide scale that collection of software, you would easily have a cascading effect. And you could also have a catastrophic failure at each point of that cascade,
where everything would just simply stop.
Yes, it would be. It would be the hit one domino, and thousands start falling.
Hmm. Sounds like a movie I saw once. But is such a thing possible?
It's possible, but again, you know, this is more in the realm of theory.
Yeah.
But people are creative. You cannot underestimate the ability of people to manipulate, control, and utilize the technology.
No, because people make the technology.
Exactly.
What one man do, another man can do.
Exactly. So one day we're going to find somebody who gets real creative, and it might even be some 13-year-old. That's going to do something, not realizing or realizing, and you're going to have a catastrophic failure.
Is there anything positive out of all of this mess that we've watched that we can gain? Because we're running up against the clock here, but is there anything positive that can come of this?
Absolutely. The number one thing that you can take from all of these attacks is this is a global issue. Okay? Now, that sounds, you know, in a negative. But the reality is, it is clear that these attacks are from all over the world. And the only way you're going to prevent them is to actually bring the various world organizations together and say, okay, folks, we really have to start working together to eliminate these types of breaches, to have controls within the countries, so that when the source country is, say, China says, okay, we're going to stop those attacks so that America doesn't have to.
Mm.
Okay? And the same from Romania and Russia and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And you're literally going to have to create some sort of a coordinated effort on a global level. That's actually a good thing that is coming from this, is because they're now starting to realize this.
But not until after a couple of go-rounds where such a thing has happened and then they realize they must.
Well, more effort will be put into it as more pain is put into the system.
Indeed. Andrew Kolarik, I want to thank you. We have to wrap it up right here. This is fascinating stuff. I wish we had more time, but at least the upside is, yeah, we can learn. We can deal with it.
Absolutely.
All right, very good. And Andrew, thank you again. And by the way, people can go to your website by linking to my website. Just simply do it on 850KOA and hit my show, and they can link to you direct. So we'll make it easy for them.
It sounds great, and it was my pleasure. And you have yourself a great day.
I shall, and you too. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And Andrew Kolarik, Cyber Terrorism. You can link to his site on my website. Just go to 850KOA.com and click on my show. Don't forget to also take our poll on Judge Sotomayor, her confirmation hearing. We continue. We'll tell you what's coming up tonight on News Radio 850 KOA.